Texas? Well,
I don't know. It's more toward, it's in the panhandle, which is, I guess, you know, northwest. I don't know if that's the heart of Texas or not. But
you heard that song deep in the heart of Texas?
Yeah, I've heard that song before.
Yeah, all right.
But yeah, it's crazy because from what I've read, though, it's what almost 1 million acres have, you know, been consumed by wildfire. And, you know, there's several hundred to several thousand herd of cattle that have perished.
And so, and the Christian
I'm also reading. This is the largest wildfire.
Gain support in all of Texas Israel history, and for Jews in
general. You know, I mean, yeah, almost
from some of these people. So, I mean, question is this something that is just part and parcel of Christianity? Is it a misunderstanding? Is Christianity particularly vulnerable to this? Things like that. So that's my introduction. So, Philbert, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, in general, yes, I would say it is inherent Christianity in and of itself. To start off with, all monotheistic religions, all three of them, actually, I don't believe there's any more than three, which is Judaism, Christianity, and Islamic faith, all believe in the same God, the God of Abraham. That's why they're referred to as Abrahamic religions. These are the three only that I'm understanding, at least the three major, but probably not only. But those are the three monotheistic religions that we know of today, and they all are derived from Judaism, which were derived from goat herders in the Middle East, you know, 2,000 and 2,000 plus years ago. And these religions, Christianity especially, was brought to Europe, you know, through brutal force through the Roman Empire. And it was not the native organic ancestral belief of the white race inherently, you know. And one could say, well, what about the pagans, right? Well, you worship these idols and everything. Well,
Whether you believe it or not, clearly it's not cows, but cows, and they're basically saying the same thing, you know, the male, the only bugs, pods, cities, and all that, so no doubt that this could be planned.
So what's going on there?
Your gut instinct. Do you think it was planned, or do you think?
I don't know. It's very hard to tell. One thing I do know, or I have observed, is that the weather. You know, it's getting more and more extreme. How should I say this? It's getting larger. Whether it's wildfires or snow, I mean, you know, just take the state of Texas, for example. You know, right after 2021, you know, right after Biden was put in, you know, Texas had this huge snowstorm that literally knocked out their power grid. Because I guess in the United States, there's three power grids. There's one on the eastern states, there's one in the western states, and there's one in Texas. Well, the snowstorm, this huge snowstorm, just destroyed the power grid down there. And, you know, the people down there didn't have electricity. And, you know, some people, the ones in the cities, the big cities like Dallas and Houston, they suffered worse than, you know, the rural farmers and cowboys. But, yeah, it's
not very good. But that's not what we're talking about here. By the way, I remember in 2012, was it? Flying over the Texas Panhandle and looking down, and the Texas Panhandle was absolutely full of wind turbines. I think that is that is the center. That's the most productive wind power generation part of the United States. Maybe, probably, there's places in China that have a higher concentration. Because China is the world's leader in wind power generation, but
Well, the Texas Panhandle is the southernmost part of the Great Plains, which is where, you know, that's where much of your wind currents are formed in the Great Plains. And it's because of that that wind in that area. I'm not a huge expert on wind turbines, as, you know, the audience can probably tell, but I do know in you know, high plains, you know, tend to have more winds. And what how are, you know, fire started? Well, it starts with a fuse combined with high winds.
Yeah.
Now, dryness and high winds is a big is a huge combination for wildfire, because, you know, the one thing I read about the Texas Panhandle is it's very dry. It's extremely dry. And then you have that wind, you know, generating that wind, and that's that is a spark for a wildfire.
So, a couple years ago, my dog crew and I went down to Texas to visit Mark Dankoff. Now that he's in San Antonio, that's not exactly the panhandle, but we went by the RBN studios in Round Rock, and that day I went by RBN studios. That was the hottest weather I had ever been in. That's not rhetoric. I saw bank thermometers, you know, where you go by the bank and it's got the thermometers, 110. It was 110 in Round Rock and Austin, like the road between Round Rock and Austin. And I remember I was out in the rural area and it was really dry and really hot. But you know something? There really wasn't a huge amount of vegetation either. Like when you're talking about California, for instance, there's more vegetation. When you're talking about maybe Montana or something like that, these are forests. There's a huge amount of vegetation. The only time I've flown over the Texas Panhandle. I've gone through Amarillo.
Amarillo.
I've been through there on a Greyhound bus, but that was like 40 years ago. But so there's, you know, there's kind of scrub there. The thing is, like, how much is there really to burn? I'm asking that seriously. How much fuel is really there? You know, you compare it to Montana, or compare it to California, or where else have they had wildfires? I mean, well, obviously they had these fires in Hawaii, but that was probably more houses and things that were burning.
Well, from what I hear, there's a lot of grass, you know, low grass. You know how on the prairie there's the low grass prairie, and it's basically, I mean, it's very dry, and that's basically how it burns, is because it's so dry and, you know, so windy. But there's just enough. I mean, it's the Texas Panhandle. It's not quite a desert. It's not like New Mexico or Arizona or even, you know, far west Texas like El Paso, that area. It's part of the Great Plains, which it's much drier than, you know, the eastern states and, you know, near the near the east. But it's not like it's not like, you know, desert dry to where nothing grows. It's not like Death Valley, California, or the Mojave Desert in Nevada. It's not like that. It's still there's still vegetation, and there's a reason why the Great Plains, I mean, is, you know, used to be the, or and still is, the breadbasket of America, because that's where a lot of the crop production comes from. One thing I did read about, too, is in that part of Texas, in the Panhandle, there's a lot of cotton there, too. And the cotton, you know, is pretty flammable.
Cotton is flammable. So, like, for instance, with the California, there's enough vegetation that the fires get intense, and there's no saving the houses from them, right? The fire comes, and those houses gonna go. I know in some places there are strategies for keeping flames away from houses, such as doing either like some sort of preliminary burns or somehow getting rid of the combustible vegetation around the house so that a fire burns around it. Like, I would think that these Texas wildfires wouldn't have huge flames the way they would in more forested areas, because there's just not that much fuel. But what's the situation with, say, property damage?
you know, of houses, of buildings.
I think, I read that, you know, entire towns, you know, the Texas Panhandle, there's many small towns around Amarillo. I heard entire towns were evacuated. And it's got to be, I'd say, at least several hundred homes probably have burned down. But in terms of casualties, human casualties, there haven't been that many, fortunately. But it's still, I mean, just the property damage. Yeah, Texas, it's an interesting state. I mean, it's, you know, from what I hear, it's like you got extreme weather from one end or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you know, one day there's a big snowstorm, then there's a wildfire, and you know, summers are extremely hot as you experienced, and then you know, winters can be very cold, and I don't know. I mean, it's a very strange state, I'll say the least. Definitely, worth visiting though.
Yeah. Well, okay. When I was a kid, I had a friend named Paul, and his father. I think his father worked for Henry Kissinger on the National Security Council, but he was a Boy Scout, and he was good at making fires, but he was also kind of a pyromaniac. And we, our scout troop was honored with playing a role at the 73 inaugural for Richard Nixon. And I remember Paul and I picking up, there were a lot of American flags. Now, my brother and my mother were in the demonstration against the inaugural, because, you know, they were against the Vietnam War. It was still going on. But I was part of the inaugural. But at any rate, Paul and I picked up a whole bunch of American flags that had been strewn on the ground. And we actually got accommodations for it. And you know, we got some recognition. Somebody saw us picking up all these flags. Of course, the thing is, actually, Paul just went, he just took them home and burned them. Not for any political reason, but just because he liked burning things. So the reason I'm bringing up Paul is because he was kind of a pyromaniac. And one winter, it was kind of dry, he set this field on fire because, you know, he was always playing with matches and Zippo lighters. We had Zippo lighters back then. We were Boy Scouts. And set a field on fire. And I remember burning, but, you know, there just wasn't all that much fuel. So it spread real fast. And then some guy came over, a couple guys came over and helped to stamp it out. But there just wasn't, it wasn't like an inferno or anything. So I don't know. I'm just bringing that up. One other thing I'm going to bring up. You mentioned the extreme weather. And I know I am probably, what do you call it? I'm unusual in RBN in that I do think there's man-made climate change because we got 8 billion people. When I was born, there was 3 billion people. Now there's 8 billion people. And and all the industrial activity, all of the change in habitat, I mean, all these forested areas that used to be forested, I mean, even before the Industrial Revolution, you had places in China. Well, let's get to China. You had places in China that were, you know, in 2,000 years ago, that were lush and forested or, you know, productive countryside, and are now, because of all the, you know, centuries and centuries and centuries of cultivation and whatnot, they're kind of deserty. You know, places like Xining, where else, Lanzhou. These places, they were a long time ago, they were real.
Kind of interesting because there's actually a huge project going on in China now where they're trying to greenify deserts, and they're trying to you know, plant more trees in the desert and basically do research as to, you know, how we can successfully, you know, build a forest out of a desert. So they got some really interesting, very, very high tech scientific innovations going on over there. Even when it comes to ecology.
Yeah. But I bring this up, and that being said, so there's no doubt that climate change has been weaponized for nefarious political purposes. I think that's something we can all agree on. But my point is, if it was proven that human activity is changing the climate, does that mean that it's okay to genocide white people? Would that make it okay?
Well, if any human population is contributing to climate change, it's the third world. It's the third world populations, especially that of sub-Saharan Africa and India, the Indian subcontinent. Those two places are special.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, and that's true. I mean, Africa in particular, you do have a massive increase in the Indian subcontinent for sure.
Which is why, by the way, I do support global development or development in the global south in Africa and India, so that way their populations will go down.
And in India, it's happening. India, in particular, but Bangladesh, the birth rate's gone down. Pakistan maybe is lagging a little bit, but the thing is,
it's not going down fast enough.
Yeah, not well, but faster than most people expected. I remember taking in the late 1980s, taking this international economics course, and it was about it was about development. And at that time, in the late 80s, people, like the global South, all over the global South, Latin America, South Asia, of course, Africa, everywhere had these huge birth rates. But the birth rates have gone way down virtually everywhere except Africa. And Africa, it just...
yikes.
I'm not young enough to use the N-word, but these N-words be something. I'm not sure, but they be doing it. And there's no stopping them.
And the problem is, too, Western liberal generosity, with all their, medical technology and everything. The problem with sub-Saharan Africa is their birth rates keep going up, but their death rates are going down.
Yeah.
And that's causing an imbalance in, kind of their ecosystem over there, which is why it's very crucial. That's why, China developing Africa, as a Chinese nationalist, why would I, I would naturally think, well, why the hell should we care about, Africa? Nothing's going to come up.
Excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Health Simple with Colorado Shilajit, fact bit number 2. In Ayurvedic pharmacology, Shilajit is the king, Raja Yoga Vahayana. Raja Yana is one of the comprehensive disciplines of Ayurveda. It comprises of specialized uses of herbal minerals to achieve the optimum state of health. Raja Yana is a path to achieve homeostasis and thus retarding the process of aging and the prevention of diseases. Shilajit stands alone as the king herbal mineral over all other earth-made substances. Within Raja Yana, Shilajit is the ultimate substance that improves quality of plasma and blood. Thus, it strengthens and promotes health to all tissues of the body. Legit Shilajit, like Colorado Shilajit, is as the literal Sanskrit translation implies. Shilajit is the conqueror of mountains and the destroyer of weakness.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
China developing Africa, as a Chinese nationalist, why would I would naturally think, well, why the hell should we care about, Africa? Nothing's going to come of it. Sure, we can develop their infrastructure, but it's all going to go to crap once we leave. Just like when the Europeans left, it all went to crap. But at the same time, it's like, well, if China is able to infrastructurally develop Africa, then maybe their birth rates will go down. Because that's what happens as a result of development. The birth rates go down.
That is usually is what happens. And birth rates amongst American blacks are not particularly high. They're higher than whites, but they're not that high. And I think in the Caribbean, like places like Jamaica, they're not particularly high. But Africa, they still are. Now, Africa,
the thing is, American blacks don't live that long because, they get into gang wars and shootings and violent crime toward each other. So they don't live that long.
Yeah, the male life expectancy for African-American men is short, but it's not falling. Now, white men have a longer life expectancy, but that life expectancy is falling. It's currently falling because of fentanyl and suicide and maybe alcoholism, but certainly fentanyl and suicide. But at any rate, like Europeans and and whites in general got really involved in Africa, and it's been a disaster for everyone concerned, pretty much. Well, maybe, Africans, maybe it hasn't really been a disaster for Africans, but I think it's been a disaster for certainly for Europe and for the world in general.
For the whole world outside of Africa.
So it depends. Like, what do you think of what is one to think of the life that Africans were living when they were encountering the rest of the world, say in the 1800s. You have there's this book that you can find it online. It's called Negroes in Negro Land. And it was published maybe in the 1880s, it was in the 1800s, I think the later 1800s. And it's a collection of accounts by both European and Arabs who were exploring the interior of Africa. And it describes just very common violence and slavery and cannibalism, and life just seemed really cheap. And
essentially just like, another animal, would live. Not to degrade them, but that's what they were, or what, and in many cases still are. It's basically just like how, you know, beasts will live, basically.
And then so, how great was that? I don't know. For an African who was living those circumstances, would that have been a nice life? I don't know. Maybe if the N-word's be willing or something. I don't know.
All I could say is a lot of this I do partially, not more than just partially, do blame on the Anglo-Saxons, on the British Empire, because their problem was that they thought that they could turn these African into civilized English gentlemen, you know, with their technology and medicine and Christianity, and they thought by bringing, you know, pretty much all these you know, things that come out of white Western Christian civilization, give that to Africa, and they'll become just like, you know, just like Englishmen, just like us, you know, Anglo-Saxons. So I blame the British, you know, for thinking that they could just lift up these sub-Saharan Africans to their level, you know, lift up these savages. that's who I really blame, are the British.
And so you do have certainly a streak amongst the British or the French, who are the main colonizers of Africa. And maybe there's a role played by Christianity and, you know, seeking souls to save. Now, I have never been to South Saharan Africa, and it's very possible that despite relative poverty and things like that, maybe it's not such a bad life for the people who live there now. Maybe it's a lot better than it used to be. Maybe it's not such a bad life, even if it's would be what we'd consider poverty. I don't know. I'm not in a position to judge. But what I will say is that Western colonization and post-colonization and involvement in Africa has certainly been a disaster for the West. Whether it's been a disaster for Africa or not, I'm not in a position to say. And if China is going to dominate Africa, all I can say is good luck. You know,
and be careful and don't get too close.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll do better. And one thing is the Chinese have their own experience of clamping down pretty hard on their birth rate, not through development. Like typically, you think of development first, and then the birth rate falls. But China did it, cut the birth rate, and then they had the development. Or maybe
their thinking was that's the only way we can develop is if we have, you know, I'm not saying I agree with this necessarily, but what I'm saying is the way that Deng Xiaoping and the reformers, their mindset was in order to lift our nation, to lift our people out of poverty, well, first
once
of all,
a jolly swagman camped by the Billy Bong under the shade of a Coolabah tree. When he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Dot.
Necessarily, but what I'm saying is the way that Deng Xiaoping and the reformers, their mindset was, in order to lift our nation, to lift our people out of poverty, well, first of all, we have to, you know, control the birth rate, the population, because if we, you know, keep allowing, you know, our own people to have as many children, well, most of them are going to starve to death, and we won't be able to develop out of this. So that was the logic of you know, Deng Xiaoping at the time. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm just saying that's what they were thinking. But the thing is, you look at China, though. I mean, China has got at least four times the landmass as India. You know, four times more landmass than India. And yet, you know, India has, you know, now India is the number one most populous country in the world. And, and China's got a lot of arable land, a lot of, you know, fertile, usable land, whereas India does not. And when I say India, that also includes Bangladesh also.
Yeah, probably closer to three times as much land.
More like what?
I think it's more like three. I know that India's got over a million square miles. China is like three and a half or something million square miles.
Either way, China is much, much larger than India. So China's able to hold a population of 1.4 billion. India is not. I mean, really, I think India and Bangladesh, I think both those regions of India, they need to, you know, slash their population by at least 2/3, I think, in order for them to be sustainable. At least 2/3.
Yeah, and which might happen. They're behind China in terms of what's called the demographic transformation. China had the politically enforced one child policy. Now it no longer has that one child policy. But people aren't having children. Now, South Korea is, their fertility rate has gone, like, 2.1 is considered sustainable. I mean, that's considered, you would think two, right? Two people having two children, but I guess, you know, with infant mortality and certain other things, 2.1 is considered, you know, some, I guess some children just aren't fertile or whatever. So typically you think of 2.1. is the fertility rate to maintain a population. And all the countries in Europe are below that. All the countries in East Asia, but some countries are way below that. And South Korea, last time I looked, was 0.8. Now I think it's 0.7. So, I mean, they're just not having kids. Now, I was in South Korea last summer, and the thing is, it's very crowded.
That's lower than Japan's, isn't it?
Lower than Japan's like 1.2 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. 1.2.
And, you know, it's very, very crowded. And South Korea, you've got probably close to half the population living in Greater Seoul. And Seoul is just full of skyscrapers like you wouldn't believe.
Does it feel a lot denser than Tokyo, Seoul?
It's pretty similar to Tokyo. I don't know if I mean, I know that they're it's pretty similar to Tokyo. But you see, the thing is, Tokyo, the fertility rate in Tokyo is about 0.8. It's really low in Tokyo. But the thing is, Japan has a lot of outlying areas. Japan has a lot more land than South Korea. It's three or four times as much land as South Korea. And so it's still got a lot of towns where, you know, people live in suburban style houses and they have a car. Not so much two cars. Some places have two cars, but, you know, they have a car and they drive to the super.
More spread out. Japan is more spread out than South Korea.
Yeah, it's a lot more spread out. And so if you go out to these other prefectures that aren't the major urban areas, the birth rate's not nearly as low. It's still low, but it's not nearly as low. But the thing is, yeah.
Which country is plagued by more of the immigration and diversity? Japan or South Korea, specifically Tokyo or Seoul? Wouldn't you see more foreigners?
And more. There's more, definitely more in Japan. And somebody sent me a little news headline, and some cabinet minister from Japan, I'm not sure what his portfolio was, but was over, I think over in India, either over in India or he was making a little video aimed at Indians saying, come here, you know, come and, yeah.
They're screwed if they do that.
Tokyo has a very large Indian school. There's parts of Tokyo that have kind of an Indian community. It's nothing like you'd see in Britain, So you're getting a certain amount in Japan. It's not huge yet. If you look at like immigration statistics, you will find there's been immigration to Korea, but the immigration to Korea is mostly ethnic. It's ethnic Koreans. From the former Soviet Union in particular, you know, from Uzbekistan, from Kazakhstan.
Even from, there's a Korean region too in China too.
Yes.
In the Northeast, in Manchuria.
Yeah. Now, North Korea's got, for East Asia, North Korea probably has the best fertility rate. It's almost at, it's like 1.8 or something. It's pretty close to.
But the mortality rate though.
Well, when they have a famine, I don't think they've had a famine since the 1990s.
Mm. Yeah, as a result of the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, there was a lot of dislocation there. They lost their fuel supply. So they're doing okay. But Japan and South Korea are having this is a massive problem for them. And if they go the road of immigration, it's curtains. Those societies,
they're screwed. They're screwed if they try to imitate the West, the United States, and the European Union. They're screwed.
They're screwed. The languages aren't. They're not easy to learn. And the Koreans are no longer using Chinese characters. And so, actually, you can learn how to read Korean. If you learn the spoken language, you can learn how to read it. But the thing with the Japanese is like really tough to learn. So if they invite in anybody who comes over as an adult, 99% of them will never learn to read or write. So that you're getting an illiterate population. Why would you want to increase illiteracy in your country with a bunch of foreigners? People who are never going to learn probably won't learn to speak very well, and they're never going to learn to read or write.
Well, the thing is, they don't want to, but it's the New World Order. It's the, you know, the American bloc, you know, to take a spin off the Soviet bloc. It's the American bloc that wills it. That's what it is. So, yeah. But, a lot of interesting, definitely interesting developments, you know, different countries and, you know, the you could say the strengths and the weaknesses, the you know, the various problems that every country has. I mean, it's all, you know, very interesting to discuss about.
It is. All right, so the global warming, I guess we touched on that to an extent. Like I say, to me, the agenda that they're pushing is a bad agenda, whether or not there's global warming. And so, like, I have trouble sometimes. Sometimes I think it's kind of a lazy cop out to insist that a problem doesn't exist when you don't like the proposed solutions to a problem. I think it's, we saw that, for instance, with the whole COVID agenda. And they were doing all this insane stuff. Everybody's got to wear a mask, social distance, lockdown.
The worst being the vaccines. Those are the worst.
The
Pfizer vaccine, yeah.
And then you'd have people say, well, there's no COVID virus, or there's no virus at all. There's no virus at all. And, okay, if we could prove to you there was a virus, would that mean that everybody should take the vaccine?
Well, of course not. Yeah, I mean, it's all about the, the agenda. Whether there's a problem or not is not beside the point, but it's just, you know, people have a tendency to go to the opposite extreme. And, you know, I can understand why, but the problem is if they go to the opposite extreme and then they're proven wrong, well, then they'll just look like fools. That's the problem. And, you know, of course, the media, the Jewish-dominated media, they love that. They love it when people, you know, go off the deep end so they can say, ah, see, look at them. They're a bunch of crazy people. So, yeah. You know, we have to be very careful, you know, in terms of, you know, when we apply our logic, you know, that it's, you know, according with facts. So that way, you know, we don't lose credibility.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there are any circumstances under which we should take these untested gene therapies that are developed by sinister people. That just doesn't make any sense. There's no, doesn't matter whether there are viruses or not. It doesn't matter. With the global warming thing, you know, Punxsutawney Phil, he made it summer, or he made it spring come early, which I kind of like. Now, obviously, if the climate really, really changes year after year after year, because every years are different. I remember there when I was a kid, a long time ago, before there was global warming or whatever. Sometimes we would have warm, you know, the spring would come early. You know, sometimes it comes early, sometimes it comes late. You know, there's always that variability. But my basic position with the global warming thing is, there's this very, very extreme view that there's some sort of tipping point, the tipping point is almost certainly BS, that you reach this point where then you get this kind of runaway, loop, like feedback loop effect, and you get runaway, and then Earth turns into Venus and there's no more life. That's
BS. Like, and laughable too.
Well, it's less plausible than Elvis on the moon or something like that. But in general, it's like, so, all right, the types of things that are more plausible, like, well, over the next several decades or a couple of centuries, I think it's fair for people to be planning for long periods of time, for multi-generations. There are some people who plan for, who are capable of doing that. Chinese are capable of doing that, and Jews are capable of doing that. But, I mean, our people don't seem to be able to think very far in the future, unfortunately. But, if it means that the climate of Boston 100 years from now is going to resemble the climate of Washington, D.C. Is that the end of the world? Well, I guess maybe certain types of insects and certain types of plants aren't going to survive as well, and others are going to invade, and there's going to be dislocation and whatnot. But it's not really the end of the world, A. And then B, to the extent that there's something that we can do about it, well, okay, if it's that important, how about laying off of World War III and laying off of white genocide and screwing the goyim, and actually white genocide. What about East Asia? I do.
Yeah, how about not starting a nuclear war?
Yeah,
for a start.
How about starting with that, and once we then eventually we could get around to the global warming.
Let's focus on just not having a nuclear, what do you call it, de-escalation. What was the Soviet, during the Cold War, what was the term used, the U.S. and Soviets would not strike first? This what?
Well, there was nuclear non-proliferation, there was disarmament, there was arms control negotiation.
Yeah, exactly. How about starting with that? Yeah.
What was the word?
I don't know. I guess, de-escalation. Well, that's in general speaking. Yeah, how about de-escalation? How about making Israel sign the non-proliferation treaty for a start?
Yeah,
how about that? Sanctioning Israel, at the very least, well, until they stop, mass murdering innocent civilians in Gaza, and they sign the nuclear non-proliferation treaty. Otherwise, they get no aid. But, of course, the American empire is, the Jewish occupied government is what it is. So we know that's not going to happen. I want to get back to Texas real quick, though. Now, since, this is RBN Studios, and their studio headquarters are down in Texas, and that's where it's, being transmitted, being broadcasted out of. Well, I know there's going to be people down there talking about, the various theories of geoengineering or weather engineering, or these evil people in high places. They're engineering these natural disasters and so forth. And all I want to say about that is Texas seems to be under attack, very lately, whether it's by, extreme weather, whether it's by this wave after wave of third world immigration, crossing the Rio Grande, or at least, trying to, I don't know how much they've gotten that situation under control. I mean, Abbott seems to be putting up some kind of a show, saying, oh, we're going to block him. I don't know how successful he is, but it's weird because Texas is one of those places. Seems to me that, and I just looked this up too. Apparently, a few days ago was Texas Independence Day. That was in, 1836 when the Anglo-Texans, the Anglo-settlers from the United States, from America back east, declared independence from Mexico, saying that we want to be a separate nation from Mexico. Of course, in Texas, there's the Alamo, where they all lost. They were all slaughtered by the Mexicans, the Anglo, the white Anglo defenders. But, later on, a month later, they won, Sam Houston, the Battle of San Jacinto, he won and kicked out the Mexicans, defeated them. So, Texas, and of course, Texans are known for, being, resisting, tyranny, come and take it, against, the established powers, whatever, they're known for, kind of that.
Don't mess with Texas
and so forth. And so, despite, the fact that, Texas, it's only like, what, half Anglo, half white, and half Hispanic Mexican. The Mexican population is increasing, whereas the Anglo population is decreasing. Despite the fact that most, the white Anglo Texans, they're mostly evangelical Christians, that's where all the big mega churches are, Joel Osteen, and, there's...
Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history? but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure and natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Mexican population is increasing, whereas the Anglo population is decreasing. And, you know, despite the fact that most, you know, the white Anglo-Texans, they're mostly evangelical Christians, you know, that's where all the big mega churches are. You know, Joel Osteen, and, you know, there was a crazy story of a, you know, freaky shooter down there. That's another story. And then there's, you know, all the big mega churches, and it's really the biggest Zionist, Christian Zionist stronghold in America. Yet despite all this, you know, for some reason, the Jewish New World Order still views Texas as a threat to their power, to their complete control over the world. So, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting dynamic to where, you know, despite a shrinking Anglo population and increasing third world population, you know, mostly Latino, despite that the Anglos there pretty much worship the Jews in their Christian evangelical megachurches, despite the fact that their governor's a total Zionist, yet somehow the Jews still view Texas as a threat to their, you know, Jewish hegemony, just as much as they view, you know, Russia and China as a threat.
Yeah, because things are going off the rail. The Jewish power structure cobbled together this unwieldy coalition. And, you know, if they'd taken a go-slow approach, if they'd been more patient, if they'd been more willing for multi-generational planning, then maybe they could have gotten away with it if it wasn't for us meddling kids. But they went too fast, and their coalition is falling apart. They had a bunch of Muslims who are supposed to help disrupt the, for instance, the Christian nature of the United States, as well as the white racial nature of the United States. They brought in a bunch of Muslims who don't care about Israel and are going to call it out, even more so in Europe. They indoctrinated all of these women in particular, but also the gays. The gays go along with this too. To dye their hair blue and get tattoos and facial piercings, and that is a means of being anti-white. But of course, the Israelis are white colonial settlers, and so it's all falling apart. They like all these things that they did they've cobbled together something that's not cohesive, and it's eating itself.
Disorganized. They're disorganized within.
Yeah.
And I think the crux of, past week we saw was, that military, soldier, he set himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy to protest what's happening in Gaza. And, whatever, background he is, that no doubt sends a message to the Zionists and to the Jewish establishment.
And we know his background. He was somebody who had been indoctrinated by a lot of anti-white Jewish propaganda. But the thing is, it's not logical. It's not cohesive. If you indoctrinate people with this anti-whiteness and say why whites are evil, and then Israel is the epitome of everything that, they say that evil whites or supremacists or Nazis are, and then Israel winds up being the epitome of everything same with evil. If somebody didn't think this through well enough, but we are running out of time. Do you have any final thoughts?
Well, all I could say is, down with the Jewish New World Order, and long live freedom and the multipolar, the up and coming multipolar world.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. That sounds good. I'll go along with that. And thank you for joining me, Cato.
Thank you. And I will talk to you next time.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Digital Radio.
Chinatown, my Chinatown, where the lights are low. Hearts that know no other lands, drifting to and fro.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.